And welcome to the Slongcast, episode 13, for Monday, August 9th, 2010. I am your host, Kevin Slonka, and with me in studio, as always, is Ryan Lancy.
Howdy.
All right, so we actually have some late-breaking news that just happened today, and we'll get to that soon. So how's that for a tease? I didn't tell you anything that it was about.
Yeah, it won't be late-breaking by then.
Yeah, by the time you listen to it, it will not be late-breaking, and everybody will probably know about it. But as of right now, it's pretty late-breaking. But first up, we have an update on Google Wave. Have you heard of Google Wave, Ryan?
I have heard of Google Wave.
Have you used it?
I have not.
I have. And
you want to know why I haven't used it, though?
Tell me.
Well, they never sent an invite to me, the bastards.
What is wrong with them?
I don't know.
This is what's wrong with invite systems.
It's like, hello, people. I do a tech blog with a guy in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. It's like, we definitely need an invite to Google Wave.
Seriously. It was horrible. I mean, it was... Did you read anything about it, like what it was supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I've read up on the technology itself. But from what I remember, you know, it's basically just like real-time internet type stuff. Like everything that's happening, you have this live communication and collaboration with multiple people.
It's real-time multi-user Gmail.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I mean, that's really all it is. The interface looks like Gmail, except the conversation goes on between more than one person or more than two people at a time. And you can, in real time, like, see people writing stuff and uploading pictures and uploading maps. There are a bunch of gadgets for, you know, all different kinds of things. Maps.
So it's a chat room.
It's a multimedia enhanced chat room.
Right.
That Google was hosting. Whenever it came out, Google said, I don't know if Google said, but everybody predicted this would be the end of email as we know it. Google Wave, this is the way people were going to communicate.
See, when people make predictions about the end of email, they're so wrong. I mean, like, text messaging may be the end of email, but text messaging is, guess what? Email. It's just shorter.
Right.
Like, so...
It's not going to replace the other.
Right. The thing that makes email and text messaging powerful is actually, the same thing that made the... this is going to be sound off the wall. The Motorola push-to-talk stuff powerful. It's asynchronous. I can, like, send a message. The other person doesn't have to be there. Like, you know, it's not like a phone call where you have to be like... Hello, what do you want?
Awkward silence.
Right. You know, where like in the analogy to push to talk is a little weird, but in that respect, it's like when you call somebody, you just beep them and it's like, oh, I heard a beep and I'll get to it in a minute. And then you beep them back and you're like, hey, what's up? And you might set the phone down. It's because it's a speaker phone. And then
it's like walkie talkie.
Yeah. It's like a walkie talkie. Exactly. So, email is even more asynchronous. And that's why it's powerful, because it lets people do other things while they're... It's like when you go throw clothes in the laundry, in the washer.
You don't sit there and stare at it for 30 minutes.
Exactly. You know, it's like, ooh, let's do live, you know, laundry.
Live laundry.
So I think saying it would be the end of email would be crazy. And I'm not surprised that this failed, because I don't think that they opened it up enough early on.
Yeah, I mean, whenever there was so much buzz about it, it was still completely private. You know, you need an invite to get in. So even the people who were hearing about it and were excited about it weren't able to play with it.
Yeah, not enough buzz. Think that's another dud that they had. Oh, buzz.
They need to shut that down.
Well, I mean, too little, too late.
Right.
Honestly.
Twitter already got that game.
Yeah, I mean, Google has a lot of good stuff out there. And these are two that were just kind of... I'm sure there's things that are reusable in both technologies that will be valuable later on.
Right, and... See,
but
I always said, always, that if Google does something, they do it better than everyone else. When Gmail came out, they did email better than Yahoo, Hotmail, everybody. When Google Maps came out, they did better than MapQuest, everybody.
Yeah.
And then Google Buzz came out, and they didn't do better than Twitter.
No.
So there goes my theory.
Yeah. And well, and I mean, getting back to Wave, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I could see the power in it, but I don't. I mean, you know what? Like, Facebook kind of has this, like, live aspect to it a little bit, too, where, like, especially with the mobile app, people, like, post replies and stuff, and it's still asynchronous. You don't have to all be participating or, like, watching the whole time.
Right.
But you're getting your notifications, and you're like, oh, someone commented on a photo, and you go read it, and it's a funny joke, and you reply, and you're like, lol.
And people don't even know that I'm not home.
Yeah, exactly, unless they, you know, really pay attention to the little mobile tags and
right.
stuff. But anyway... You know, I just don't think that this, like, really, like, always on type thing, like Wave, where it's, like, always on.
Yeah, and maybe we just didn't see the right use case, you know, because they did just kind of put it out and said, go play.
Yeah.
You know, and people had to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, I think asynchronous methods of communication are fastly becoming, you know, more popular, or maybe have sucked up more of a segment of the market that, you know, that was once owned by phone calls, possibly.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, think about, like, even, like, instant messaging. That's totally synchronous, right? It's somewhat you can, like, wait for the message, but it's mostly synchronous. Like, you're mostly have to, like, both be there to have a conversation.
Yeah, I'd say it kind of splits it a little bit.
It does. You can leave messages, but it's generally synchronous. Right. Like, think about how much you use that in, like, 1999 or 2000 maybe you're a little bit younger than me, but, like, in that era, like, the beginning of the 2000s versus now. Like, I still use instant messaging. But
not that much.
Yeah, I'd say I still communicate with, like, 3 or 4 people on IM. Like, and they're people that I've known for a long time.
They were people you started talking on IM with.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. So I think it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I am always logged in to my Instant Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Always. You know, my desktop is always on when I'm on my laptop. That's the first thing I open. But you're right. I really don't talk to that many people on there. It's either Facebook message or Facebook statuses or Twitter replies or text messages.
Right.
But I still think it has its part. You know, it's not like Google Wave was supposed to be the email totally killing it.
Right.
You know.
Now, the one place this could fit in is where phone calls still do. And that's when you really want to get some work done with someone. Like, collaborate live with someone on something, get problems solved.
This should be an enterprise tool.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's kind of like a, well, it's like you said, it's a multimedia enabled. It's a little bit like video conferencing with, like, more like other multimedia and stuff.
Yeah,
sharing.
Yeah, definitely. I would like to see this compete against, or maybe not compete, but put up against whatever SharePoint has, whatever all of the other enterprise.
Whatever SharePoint has will kick its ass.
Well, I mean, whatever other collaboration tools there are in the enterprise, just to see if this fills a void that those ones don't have, or whether it's totally crap compared to what's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you got to think, what was Google thinking when they made this? They obviously had to have something in their mind. They don't just make stuff.
That's that'd be a great bumper sticker. What was Google thinking?
WWGT?
Yes.
That doesn't roll off the tongue quite so well.
What was Google thinking?
Okay, so more on Google later. But for now, another story from the Black Hat Conference, which took place going up 2 weeks ago now. And this one is kind of creepy, as were, you know, all the other ones, you know, stealing money from ATM and everything. But this one gets a little more personal. I thought this was really interesting, and it's really easy how they do it. So another thing to be careful about. But what this one guy did in his Black Hat Security talk titled How I Met Your Girlfriend. Yeah, it's a funny take on the TV show. If you're not watching the TV show How I Met Your Mother, go watch it. Good show.
That's a great show.
But either way, this guy basically details how he stalks somebody. And you would think that he would need to, like, get your IP address when you're using Wi-Fi and, you know, be, like, right beside you, come upon you on accident. You know, you have to be there to get their IP. But no, that's not what he's doing at all. And what this guy does is, you know, of course he has to target somebody. So it's not just, you know, anybody. He's targeting somebody that he wants to stalk. And he, you know, emails them or whatever, gets them to go to this webpage that he makes with some bad JavaScript on it. And it
or good JavaScript.
Or good JavaScript,
yeah,
yes.
On your point of view.
But it doesn't steal her IP address, I'm assuming. You know, you're stalking a girl. I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So you're not stealing their IP address or their MAC address. What you're doing is you're taking into account that most people don't change the passwords on their routers that they use. And most people have old firmwares that are exploitable. So with this exploit that he does on this website, it allows him to see the MAC address of the person's Wi-Fi router. So assuming the person's using Wi-Fi, it allows him to get the MAC address from their Wi-Fi router. The reason this is important is because Google has sent around all of their Street View cars. And remember, we talked about this maybe a month ago. They log MAC addresses.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do GPS locations of where people are whenever they're using Google Maps. So all of this information on the internet via API access. So this guy takes the router's MAC address that was given to him via his excellently scripted JavaScript and matches it against the Google Maps database, and bam, he knows where you're at.
Yeah.
How creepy is that?
It's crazy. I mean, I don't... This, like... It's, like, privacy and blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, if you have a router, it's, like, put a password on the dang thing.
Yeah, don't leave it blank or admin or password.
Yeah. I mean, even just changing it to, like, another word is better than nothing.
Right, something not easily guessable.
Yeah, like, you know, Casio.
Right, nobody's going to guess that.
Right.
Casio doesn't make routers.
Right, exactly.
But don't use Casio now that we said it.
Yeah, don't use that, because I'll try. No, I mean, seriously, just change it to something. But the interesting, you know, I think a lot of this, like, there's a lot of, like, very anti-Google, or, like, not anti-Google, but, like, painting Google maybe in a slightly bad limelight because of this right. privacy stuff. But, you know, logging these MAC addresses, I think your MAC address is kind of, like, in the IP protocol anyway. So if somebody captures your traffic, they can get your IP address.
Yeah, yeah. If you're doing
or your MAC address.
If you're doing man in the middle or something, it's in the packet because the internet has to know where it's going.
Right. Something does.
Yeah.
I guess the router could maybe strip it off if it doesn't need to send it up the stack.
Well, then it couldn't come back because that layer two, you know, switches need to know what port the MAC addresses
are on.
Right,
but can't it just maintain a table of, like, when the packet returns, like, oh, this IP address goes to this MAC?
Yeah, yeah, it could do that. It might. Yeah, I don't think they strip them, but you're right. They probably could strip it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know how the protocol. I don't remember all the details. But the thing that it's useful that they log this stuff, though, because, like, one instance I use it in is if I'm in a just this weekend I was in a hotel and we want to see, like, you know, if you want to see what's nearby the hotel, you can go to Google Maps and hit my location. And if you're on the hotel's Wi-Fi, I'll guarantee you, if you're not out in, like, Timbuktu.
Very nice place.
Yeah, it is. It's nice in the summer, especially this time of year. So if you're not out there and you hit the little My Location button, which I think you have to enable in Google Maps.
Yeah, you have to turn that on.
Yeah, it's going to do that exact thing. It's going to get the MAC address of the router you're on, send it to Google so they know where you're at. And then they return the location in the maps code. And then, bam, you hit what's next nearby, and it's like, oh, there's an Outback nearby. I think I'll go get myself a Bloomin' Onion.
Right. Yeah, we're always talking about, you know, all the bad things that people can do with this data, but, you know, on the other hand, it's completely useful.
Yeah, you could, I mean, if you're in a place you don't know, you could drive around for 2 hours looking for something nearby, you know.
Or you could go on Google Maps and be there in 2 minutes.
Right. I guess you could use the phone book or something, but.
The what? Is that really thick thing that people throw on my porch that I have to throw away?
Yeah, like strong guys rip it in half.
Yeah, yeah, those things.
Yeah.
I use them
to prop up my couch when the legs break off.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Because I have so many parties.
I should keep one of those. You have parties?
Yes.
Why am I not invited?
I don't know. Wait, what parties?
Fine. Next article. This one from Bloomberg. Intel can't use threats or bundled prices, says the FTC. What does this mean? Well,
it means don't be a jerk, Google, or Intel.
Yes, Google.
Sorry.
I mean, Intel. So basically, what the FTC is now telling Intel is that you cannot make it so super good of a deal or force people, you know, basically creating antitrust, you know, an antitrust or some sort of monopoly, so that people like Dell or major manufacturers of computers give you other options. Because right now you pretty much only have the option of Intel. Some of them give you AMD. But really that's because Intel, you know, bundles their processor with either, you know, the video drivers because they're also Intel onboard video drivers. They bundle a lot of things so that's really your only option. So the FTC now says, stop it. There are other makers of processors out there. You can't do this anymore. Give them a chance.
Well, they've been doing this for a long time. And even though AMD for a while had the better technology, they had faster chips for a while.
They still didn't have the name Intel.
Yeah, well, you know? Not even the name. It's just like, I don't think they had the market. Well, I think they had the budget PC market share, but they never got the high-end market. Like, they never, like, won. They were like, king of the hill for, like, a second.
And that's why I half wonder, is it just because of their name? You know,
I don't know.
Because everybody knows Intel. You always see the Intel Inside sticker. You see the commercials on TV. Is that the only reason AMD didn't win? Because their processors are better.
Yeah, well, right now...
Maybe not now because of the Core i7 and crap, but...
Yeah, Core i7 is pretty wicked fast. I mean, I haven't bought an Intel computer except for my laptop, because
you really don't have a choice.
Yeah, there's very little choice in laptops, especially if you want specific style. But you know, my desktop PCs have been Phenoms, Athlons, Athlon 64s for years.
Yeah,
I mean, the
computer I built to go to college was a dual Athlon MP system.
Mm-hmm. Dual chips.
Dual chips, yeah.
That's awesome. You probably had like a Tian motherboard.
A what?
Tian? Who made
it? Oh, I thought you said Italian.
No, Italian.
Like what?
Yeah, made of Italian leather.
No, it was a... I really don't remember what the motherboard was, but there was only like one manufacturer that made motherboards for this.
I think it was Tian. I think they were one of the only ones. I looked into that, but anyway, we're getting off track. I like AMD stuff. I think if Intel is using these tactics to like beat AMD down, it's wrong.
And I think that's what they were doing, kind of. Not necessarily just AMD, but everybody else.
Right. I mean, and just look at what we owe to AMD right now. I don't think Intel was even bothering to extend the 32-bit architecture of the x86 core to 64-bit.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Right, and AMD went and did it, and now Intel licenses that technology from AMD. They've had cross-license agreements for years, but... So, I mean, AMD, they're a good company. They're helping us out. Otherwise, right, we'd have been stuck with that Itanium crap.
Oh, don't even bring that up. Stupid Itanium. Yeah, so either way, the FTC laid the smackdown on Intel, so maybe... sometime in the next year, you're going to start seeing some choices on the computers that you buy. It's not all going to be Intel. You know, we can only hope. And we can only hope that companies like AMD start producing competitive processors.
Yep.
So moving on to an article that came out. We have a series of articles coming up here, all linked together. The first one came out on August 4th, so 5 days ago, from the New York Times. This article gets me mad.
I think everyone's heard of that paper, right?
Like physical paper?
Yeah. Well, I mean the New York Times.
Oh, I thought it was a website only.
Oh.
Paper.
Yeah,
wow.
What's paper?
I don't know what that is.
You mean like killing trees and stuff?
Wait, we kill trees?
Yeah, to make paper. Sometimes we recycle the old paper.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I think newspapers recycle.
Recycle stuff, people.
Yeah.
So either way, the New York Times put out an article titled Google and Verizon... near deal on web pay tiers. Now, what this article tells us, you know, as of August 4th, all that we knew was that Google and Verizon were getting into bed together to make us pay more money. They were going to try to end net neutrality and tier the internet so that, you know, depending on what type of websites or what type of service you wanted, you would have to pay more or less. That is what the New York Times article led us to believe. So, before we go on, because we do have two other articles in this progression, what do you think would be the result of this? You know, if companies such as big as Google and Verizon got together to do this, do you think they could pull it off?
They probably could. I think they would be shooting themselves in the foot, you know, in many cases. Like, they basically could chop up the internet and you know, sell it however they want it. Which, I mean, they technically have the right to do. Yeah, like, I kind of have the right to, like, you know, let my grass grow and let my house fall apart and, you know, all that other stuff. But it's to my detriment because my property value is going to go down.
Right.
You know, if the internet doesn't maintain what has made it a success, which has been its, like, openness, I think that, you know, they would lose ground.
Yeah, and... I want to agree with you, but I think on the other hand, maybe it's not the other hand, but on a finger of the same hand, I don't know that anybody would, I mean, because what are you going to do? Not use the internet? You know, if they start tiering stuff and you start having to pay, just like cell phones, you're going to pay because you have no other option.
It's true, unless there's an open alternative.
Do you know of any one of those now?
Like in cell phones?
No, in internet.
Oh.
Like any type of internet provider that doesn't at some point, you know, because even mine, you know, right. I use a local WiMAX carrier, but, you know, one or two levels up from the local WiMAX carrier, it's owned by AT&T. So it's one of the big companies.
Yeah, but I mean, if you went and you, like, say you wanted to start an ISP, which would probably be not profitable at all, but you could buy into the, you know, to like a, you get it, like, not a backbone connection, but some kind of high data rate connection. And if it's a business class line, they're not going to throttle anything, you know?
Right.
But
yeah, you still have the whole thing of throttling once it gets onto the internet somewhere, you know, starts running over Verizon's lines or Google's dark fiber.
Yeah.
You know, they can shape it however they want there. So yeah, I do agree with you. That would be totally to their detriment. People would start hating those companies a lot more than they already do.
Mm-hmm.
But let's move on a little bit, because what we basically found out is the New York Times is full of crap.
Yeah. I really think, well, let's get, oh, go ahead and.
No, you can go for it.
I think that, like, this is an example of, like, what people talk about with, you know, the New York Times sometimes in bias. Because it's obviously, even though I'm a little bit, like, I'm sort of on the fence with this net neutrality stuff. I could see it going really well, and I could see it going really bad. And this is an example, I think, everyone knows most of, like, the, you know, more liberal members of Congress and other aspects of it are fighting for net neutrality. And now they write an article that basically pinpoint two of the biggest, like, internet companies, communication companies, saying that they're striking a deal.
To do the worst thing we could ever imagine.
The worst thing that the net neutrality people could imagine, at least. And it's wrong. They don't even have a retraction on their page yet.
Yeah. This is horrible. And let me just introduce the next article. The next article came out, I believe, the next day. Let me see if there's a date on this. Awesome. So The Guardian.
Yeah,
oh, there is August 5th.
Yeah.
Yeah. So literally the next day, Google came out and said, whoa, we didn't say anything. We didn't even talk to anybody.
Yeah.
So New York Times, you are full of crap.
Exactly.
This, you know what I think this is? I think this is corruption in all of journalism.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to get that scoop. They need to get the breaking story, and they will literally make stuff up, hoping that they're right in order to get it.
Well,
and they failed this time.
I think worse than making it up, I think, is using your position as a journalist to, like...
Right, because they're the biggest.
Yeah.
One of the biggest.
Regardless of how you feel about the issue, it's still wrong to use your position as a journalist to sway people's opinion about, like, because you feel that way, not because of the facts.
Right. And it's not like this is an op-ed piece or something, you know. This is in the technology section, which is inside of the business section. You know, this was put out there as real facts.
Yeah, well, anyone that gets tech news doesn't get it from New York Times anyway.
That's true.
As the whole, we've mentioned this before, but, you know, Jason Calacanis totally opened a can of whoop-ass on the tech press and the mainstream journalism when it came to, you know, him saying about the features that the iPad was going to have.
Right. So first, Jason Calacanis and the iPad. Second, you know, Bloomberg and their non-sources of a Verizon iPhone.
Yeah.
And now the New York Times and mm-hmm. making up stories about Google and Verizon. You know, this has got to stop.
Yeah.
So the last article in this three article, this tri-series, what's... I tried to
trilogy?
Make up, trilogy. That's the word.
Trilogy.
I tried to make up a big word there and I couldn't do it.
I wish you all could have seen how excited Kevin's face was when I said trilogy.
I really need to get this out on video.
Yeah.
So this one, if you're looking at the list of articles, it's not on the list because Ryan just brought it up to me when he got here. It's an article that just came out today at 5:51 p.m. So obviously I didn't see it all day at work. But apparently there is some sort of truth. You know, Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, you know, saw all this crap and he's like, whoa, I need to tell you guys what's really going on.
Yeah.
So what did you see in this article?
Well, basically, they had a press conference and it seems like, you know, it was a phone press conference and Engadget was on the line. And that's where I'm sourcing all this information. They basically outlined a bunch of rules that they're going to, like, abide by with Verizon because they say, you know, Verizon needs our content. We need Verizon's data network. And so they set out these basically just like sort of tenets saying, like, you know, that there'll be transparency, that anyone that blocks access to another person would be an obvious violator. They want to set up some kind of interface with the FCC to say there should be transparency in this communication.
And it looks like I see 3G mentioned. So it looks like that a lot of this has to deal with cell data and not necessarily all computer data.
Right. I mean, and Verizon is, they're balancing some interesting issues. You know, like they have a network to maintain. They can't let it, even if it's oversold, even if the capacity is a little bit higher than what they have available, they can't just let it crash. Like, Would you rather be able to make phone calls and text messages and have no way to send video over your phone, or just have the whole thing, like, just have, like, intermittent access? Like, maybe you can get it one day, maybe you can't. You don't know if your text messages get there. Your voicemails get deleted. I mean,
that text message thing already happens.
Yeah.
If you're going from AT&T to Verizon, you're lucky if you get those text messages.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate that.
It was a lot worse on Nextel. I can tell you that much.
I never had Nextel.
It was terrible. So getting back to this article, I think they've basically just agreed to play nice, and not to really charge based on the content, it seems like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so that's apparently there was something. So even though the New York Times, you know, fed us a bunch of crap, they must have had some source that at least gave them, you know, the correct news that Google and Verizon were talking about something. So now we know what it is. You know, if you go to Engadget's site, at least as of, you know, 8:30 Monday night, it's the fourth or fifth article down on the front page, but you'll probably have to search for it if you listen to this on Tuesday.
Here's just one more thing on this. Reporter from TechCrunch asked this question in that conversation, and the question was, there's some confusion about services. All these networks are merging into IP-based networks. What services might there be that aren't on the internet? Answer, I think everyone's trying to turn this into a problem. You think 3D goes over the internet? Some companies might want to send 3D over the internet. And then he says, there's another answer. It says, Verizon is standing tall and agreeing to no paid prioritization and transparency and transparency. And Google is agreeing that it will invest in exploding internet applications, and we've agreed to feed that cookie monster. So, like, they're like, look, we're not going to do what everyone's saying we're going to do. We're not going to charge.
They're actually for net neutrality, and they're trying to keep it that way.
Right, but they don't want crazy government regulation of it. They want transparency, not crazy government regulation.
Right.
I think this is a good compromise.
Right. Yeah, it looks like they want exactly what we talk about every time we talk about the FCC and their net neutrality thing, is that they're just saying, hey, we just need to do, you know, these two rules, and you guys will be good.
Right.
You know, so that seems to be what they're going after.
Because the one thing to remember, too, is, and this is the libertarian side of me, you know, kind of like thinking, it's like, we already have laws in place. They can't, no one can use their market position to leverage against other markets. So if Verizon would, for some reason, become involved heavily in NBC Universal, they can't use their position as a network operator to make them money in another market to the detriment of the market that they're influencing. So, I mean, there's already laws against this stuff.
Right.
We don't need more laws, for sure.
Definitely. So let's get off of the net neutrality deal now that we know the facts about what Google and Verizon are talking about. Ryan, are you a tablet user?
No. Well, a tablet user. Does the iPad count?
Yeah, that style of tablet.
Okay, I use an iPad on occasion that a friend has.
Okay, but you don't own one.
I don't own one.
Would you own one if it would be a third or a quarter of the price of the iPad? Would you see a need for it?
I would own one if... Here's my rules for Ryan owning an iPad and a tablet.
Mark this down. Rule number one.
Rule number one, it has to run Windows 7 or some variant of Windows OS.
So you want to be able, what you're saying is you want to be able to write your own applications.
Yes.
Because you know Windows.
Right. I don't want the Mac environment. I don't need it. I don't want it. Number two, it's got to have a webcam on it.
Okay.
That's, if you have a tablet and you can't do video conferencing, you're a loser.
I agree.
That's my opinion. Three, it's got to have, great battery life. That's one thing that I will give Apple kudos on. The battery life on that iPad is amazing. I've seen it run all day, and it's 80%.
And I will say that even the iPhone 4, I think I mentioned this before, but my battery now lasts like 4 days.
Yeah.
Whereas normally it was a day and a half, maybe.
That's awesome. I mean, they're killing it on power consumption. Although they don't run flash, so that's probably the reason.
Right. Okay, so the reason I was asking all those questions is because it looks like Best Buy might be entering the tablet market. And by tablet, I mean an iPad-style device. The CTO of Best Buy tweeted some pictures that looks like It kind of looks like the HP Slate, if you've ever seen pictures of that. If you haven't, go look at it. But it looks like...
Is the Slate the convertible one that kind of like connects into like the keyboard and you can like... You can unconnect it and then it runs some kind of crazy like Linux variant.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm not sure.
Oh, I thought that was the Slate.
So anyway, what it looks like is their house brand, Best Buy's house brand, Rocketfish.
What a great name.
Seriously.
Rocketfish.
I was actually looking into buying some...
Rocketfish?
Some fish with rockets on them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, they make...
I like sharks with laser beams.
Sharks with frickin' laser beams on their head. But they make these wireless devices so you can have, you know, 5 or 7.1 surround sound in your house. And you buy their little devices for the rear speakers so you don't have to run cables. So they're supposed to be really good.
And they're wireless or just wire? Like
It's a receiver and a transmitter pair. And you plug it into your, you know, you buy the transmitters into the back of your audio receiver. And then you put the receivers on the speakers behind your couch or wherever, and now you don't have to run wires.
That's cool.
And they're cheap because they're a house brand of Best Buy, and they're supposed to be really good.
Hmm.
So I was looking into that because I don't have surround sound yet. So horrible.
Yeah.
I watch all my movies and no boom boom. That's what you look for.
The boom boom.
Boom boom. But either way, Rocketfish, the house brand of Best Buy, they're going to be releasing a tablet under that name. So that's why I was asking about the price, because if it's coming out under a house brand name and it's supposed to be running Android 2.2, at least that's what the rumors are so far, you know, what do you think about this? Do you think this would get you into the tablet market, owning one for yourself?
Well, I have previously stated my requirements for being in the tablet market on this program.
So assuming that maybe it comes out with Windows 7, because that's another rumor,
yeah,
is that it might also have Windows 7. Or some variant of Windows 7.
The Android would be a second choice for me. It's interesting. I'm surprised Best Buy is getting into this type of thing.
That was the whole reason for me putting this article in here, is that it's not a tech company. It's a mega store.
Like a big box. It sounds like some executive at Best Buy has got the crackpot idea that they can like lower their costs by cutting out the middleman, being the middleman being the manufacturers. And I have to say, it's...
We don't need manufacturers.
Well, no. Don't get me wrong. They do. But the manufacturers that we think are manufacturers today are really just system integrator assemblers. You know, most of these computers are built by Chinese companies.
Foxconn.
Right. There's a lot of them. And then they're just, you know, they're designed here in the U.S., but hey, why can't Best Buy hire a designer? And
very true.
You know, maybe they're trying to cut it out. It's like, hey Apple, hey HP, hey Dell, hey Gateway, quit like making us pay all this money for your crap.
And crap it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nobody knows. You know, it was a very short article, just some commentary on Robert Stevens, the CTO's tweet, and the picture. So you know, maybe we'll see. Maybe somebody will actually get into the tablet market with a decent tablet that can compete with the iPad at hundreds of dollars less. Because that's really what it's going to have to come down to. It's going to have to compete. People are going to have to get the same experience that, you know, the awe factor, and it's going to have to be no more than $300. That's what I'm saying. $299,
yeah.
Highest price. Because if you're paying any more, you might as well spend another $100 and get an iPad.
It'll be doable in a year.
And maybe that's when we'll see this. Yeah, maybe we won't hear another thing about it for a year. So here's hoping. So now we move into a bunch of mobile phone stories, as usual. The cool thing that I found this week is a nice little article from LadyAda.net, and she is the person who makes the Minty Boost. M-I-N-T-Y, Boost. And the Minty Boost is a battery charger for your iPhone, iPod, your iDevice. It's your iCharger for your iDevice in your iLife. But, either way, you know that there are none or very few accessories out there that allow you to charge your device with AA, AAA batteries. This person figured out how to do it, builds it. You can buy the Minty Boost. But the cool thing about the article is that, before I say the cool thing, let me ask a couple questions. Have you had multiple generations of iPods?
Yes.
Have you ever tried to plug in one of your older cables to your newer one and it doesn't charge or it errors out?
I have not had that problem, but I have not. I think that would be the case probably with like my old FireWire ones. And I think now they only charge over USB.
See, I just did. I never had this problem before because I always just used the new cable that came with the device. But I had an old 40 gigabyte, you know, third or fourth gen iPod, the thick ones where they still used moving hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
And I always left that, the docking station and the USB cable, plugged into my Linux computer upstairs in my office. And I had my iPhone up there, and it was running low on battery. So I'm like, oh, I got this cable. I'll just plug it in. It'll get some charge over USB. No sooner do I plug it in, I get the yellow yield traffic sign. You know, this charging from this device is not supported. Crap.
Yeah.
So I got to go downstairs to get my new cable. And that's a lead up into this article that is on the Minty Boost site, or on Lady Ada's site about the Minty Boost. But it's named The Mysteries of Apple Device Charging. And it is really cool how they do this. Did you know how Apple like differentiates how they can make certain cables not do certain things? And
I previously read an article to the effect of the different charge rates that they support.
Right. So it goes to note that, you know, USB is always spitting out, you know, the same power. Apple's not figuring out a way to modify your USB port or anything like that. You know, iTunes doesn't tell USB only do this. You know, it really is magic in the microchip in the cable or the charger. And this person figured it out. And it's really cool that newer iPods and iPhones have two charge rates. They can detect whether you're plugged into a computer or whether you're plugged into a wall outlet. And they can charge at different amperages accordingly. So what this person found out is that if your cable... So there's four USB wires. There's the ground, there's the power, and there is data send and data receive.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously when you're charging, you're not using data send and data receive. But Apple does. And this is how they tell what you're plugged into. And basically there are two voltages. If they notice that on those two wires you have 2.8 volts and 2 volts, you will charge at 1 amp, which basically means you're plugged into a wall.
Yeah.
The little square thing that you plug the USB cable into with the prongs that go on the wall, the microchip in there says use 2.8 and 2.0, and it figures out that... Okay,
on the data lines.
Yes, on the data lines.
Right.
Use 2.8 and 2.0, and that will result, because of the resistors in there, in 1 amp.
Yeah.
And she also figured out that if they both have 2 volts... that's going to be 500 milliamps, and that means that you're plugged into a computer or you're plugged into a battery powerer. Mm-hmm. Because no matter what you do, AA, AAA, you can't get an amp.
Right.
You just, no matter how you hook them up, how many you hook them up, you can't get an amp. So I think this is really cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't like the fact that they've been changing the specs.
Okay, I don't think that is cool. I think this lady reverse engineering
it
is cool.
Oh, yeah. It's cool that she did this. It's definitely cool. I mean, the thing is, like, I think a lot of phones actually do this because if I plug my BlackBerry into my USB port, it charges, but much, much more slowly.
Right, so it's probably only a draw on that half amp.
Right, and that's what the USB spec says. One thing she points out here, though, is that if you plug a USB device into a USB port that doesn't talk on the data lines to warn the computer about what it's going to draw, it can actually draw more than 500, and there's a resettable fuse in the USB circuit.
Right. USB it's made that way that you can, even if you're not talking, you can kind of say, hey, I would like to draw 500 milliamps, here I come.
Right.
And some devices just don't do that.
Right. But another example is I've seen an Android phone that when you plug it in, it actually says, when you plug it in the computer, it's like, do you want to sync? And you're like, no. And it's like, okay, we're going to go into USB charging. But USB charging is much slower than wall charging.
Oh, that's cool.
It actually warns you. So their wall device must do a similar thing where it puts out more data, or the phone is able to tell that it can't get as much power.
Right.
Because it's connected to a data connection.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you. I hate that they're changing this. You know, basically, the reason companies are doing this is so that they can make more money by selling you their own branded chargers.
Yeah.
You know, they change the specs every time they release a new product, so the old stuff doesn't work, and they have to make first-party devices and make more money.
Yeah.
So that is horrible, but really cool. And Lady Ada puts up the schematics. I mean, you have everything of how to make one of these yourself, or you could just go buy the Minty Boost if you, you know, are out in the desert and you need to charge via AA or AAA batteries. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I never had that problem. But if you do, there's devices out there for it.
You know, one last thing on this. I've had this USB, or I'm sorry, iPod charger for my car since I got my first iPod, which my first iPod was a 3G iPod, third generation. Then I had a 4G and a 4G color. And I only bought the new iPods. Well, the first one I sold because I wanted the 4G. Then the 4G broke and I got the 4G color. Then the 4G color broke and I got a iPod Classic. Okay, so that's like the 6th gen hard drive iPod, right?
Right.
All of those have worked off of my cigarette lighter charger that I bought for the original one.
I will also attest to that.
But from what I know, this is a Belkin charger, by the way.
As is mine.
Is it? Yeah, this is the last version of the iPod that will work on it, from what I've read online. With whatever version I have of the charger, and I know they don't make this charger anymore. It drives me crazy because it's awesome. The reason it's awesome is it has a headphone jack on the part that plugs into the car.
Into the cigarette lighter part.
Yeah. So you can plug in, like if you have a head unit, you can, or a tape adapter, you can leave that plugged in and you have one connection to your iPod. It's power and audio, which is awesome. And there are none out there that do that anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm running into right now. I have an FM transmitter one and
they suck.
Yeah.
But here's the cool thing. Because of Lady Ada's nice hard work, I can build my own.
Right. Now you have the schematics. You can just do it.
Yep. Yay.
Okay. So I believe the next two articles are all you.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we're there already.
Wow. okay. So the first article is about a little more on the antenna issues of the 4G.
No, not more.
Yeah, more. I like more issues about the 4G iPod.
Poop.
Or iPhone. So recently it was announced that the head of engineering, iPhone engineering at least, for Apple was terminated or let go or laid off or...
Senior VP, President of Engineering.
Yeah. And this is interesting because he was one of the lead engineers in charge of the whole antenna problem. Now, Apple...
He engineered the problem.
Yes, he engineered...
that was great how you mentioned it.
Yeah, he engineered the problem. That was actually a slip of the tongue, but hey, you know, sometimes you win some. Anyway, they're saying that he was let go because of culture issues, I guess, which to me sounds like a violation of someone's First Amendment rights.
I totally agree. You cannot say that.
Yeah, it's kind of a bad way. It's like, oh, we don't like who you are.
Right.
Something you really can't control, you are.
You don't like that I'm white? You're firing me?
I don't know. But anyway, they let him go, and I don't know. I think this is further proof that this was probably a pretty big issue inside of Apple, even though they have a press conference and said, oh, the problem, it's so small. It's such a small problem. It's only one problem per 100 million zillion phones sold. Yet, they fire the guy in charge. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kevin?
I don't know what to think. Now, maybe I just didn't see it in the article, but I didn't see them say for sure what happened, whether he left or whether he was fired. Did they actually say that they let him go, or did they say that he left under his own power? Because I didn't see that.
I think they let him go, but they're saying that it was due to this culture... differences in culture or something like that, or incompatible culture.
Yeah, because here it is.
Different
corporate cultures.
Yeah. Oh, wait. That's something else, though.
Yeah.
There was something about it.
Yeah, it must be in a different article.
Yeah, I've read a few different ones. So
yeah, because this article here just says he is leaving the firm.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little too...
it's a little
convenient.
Too close. Yeah.
Convenient.
That's the word. It's an inconvenient truth. Yes. Al Gore.
Yes. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't...
And there's another story here that we're going to get to that I think lends a little more proof to this fact. but we'll save that for later.
Of what fact? The culture fact?
No, the fact that they let him go because of the antenna.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he should have been let go, nor do I think he should have left because of this.
No.
Because, I mean, they're not losing money. You know, despite all of this bad press, they haven't stopped selling iPhones.
Well, my class action case hasn't got to court yet.
So. Oh, okay. So we'll just wait for that.
Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, you know, despite all of the bad press, people are still buying them. There's still a waiting list. A guy that I work with just ordered one, never had a smartphone before. He ordered one and he's been waiting for how many weeks? You know, they can't even get him the right tracking information because they're so bogged down. I mean, they're still taking millions of orders. So why did this guy leave? Just because of this one problem? You know, I don't see Steve as being that type of guy.
Oh, he fires people on the spot.
But
I'm trying to remember the story that I heard about him.
That was old Steve, though.
No,
Steve has changed.
Well, maybe.
I mean, he's definitely
changed.
I'll give
him the benefit of the doubt for now, but.
Yeah, but either way, no matter how he left, I still don't think he should have if it was under his own power, and I don't think they should have fired him if it wasn't under his own power. Because I think that for all the good work that he put into this, you know, the antenna is still better. You know, if you remove the...
Not according to Consumer Reports.
Okay, so agreed. I'll give that one to you. So if you hold the phone in the wrong place and you kill the signal...
In the wrong place.
That's a bad thing. Oh. But if you don't hold it there, the antenna is much better. I have noticed... Better reception. I really have noticed better reception. So it is a better antenna, despite that one problem. Mm. And yeah, you shouldn't have to live with problems, but you do with every device.
Yeah.
Not necessarily an antenna problem, but there are things you don't like about every device that you buy.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, move on. I don't want to talk about this antenna thing anymore.
Okay, no more antenna. So the next story is about an exploit in the...
I love exploits.
Yeah, it's an exploit that a hacker can use to maliciously
with your meniscus.
I'm drunk on Pepsi throwback.
Has a high level of alcohol.
Yes, a lot. So they can use it to maliciously get into your iPhone, or maybe with malicious intent,
or iPad.
Yeah, both. So basically, this is a hole in the PDF, like.
The
viewer.
The code that renders PDFs.
Right. And I think the code's from Adobe, right?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but it probably is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Adobe pretty much created PDFs, so all code forks from them.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. So they can use some unsigned code to get onto a device and basically hack into your iPhone. This is not cool.
Yeah, this is... Well, it depends on who you are, because if you are the people that this article talks about, then you are catering to the group that wants to jailbreak their phone or their iPad.
That's true. And did they use this as a way in to do the jailbreak?
Yes.
Most recent?
Yeah. If you happen to watch the most recent episode of Twit, did you happen to see that one?
I did not.
So they did this. Not the most recent one. Last week's. With Brian Brushwood when he was on there. He actually gave Leo Laporte his iPhone. They went to the Jailbreak Me website and jailbroke his phone live on the air because it's now legal now because of the whole DMCA thing that came out.
Right,
you're allowed to jailbreak your phone. But basically, it looks like the Apple lock screen. So you go to this website and it looks like, you know, an iPhone wallpaper with a little slider at the bottom. You slide the button. It runs the PDF exploit. Bam. Gives you a message, your phone has now been jailbroken, Cydia has been installed for package management, and then it gives you a choice. Are you an expert user? Are you a normal user? And it puts you into whatever mode so you can, you know, do package management on your own or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it uses the PDF exploit. It's a one slide. As long as you can slide your finger across the screen, you can jailbreak a device now.
Wow.
So cool if you're those people.
Yeah.
Bad if you open PDFs up on your phone because now anybody can hack you.
Yeah. So much for the closed system being bulletproof.
Seriously. Yeah, this is one of two problems that Apple's had. You know, they're looking to close both of them now. And the follow-up article to this, did you have anything else to say about this before I move on?
No, that's it.
Because I put in a follow-up article on this once I saw that Ryan submitted this story, and that is, you can now get Flash on your iPhone.
Awesome.
How do you do it? Well, You jailbreak your phone with the Jailbreak Me website using that PDF exploit we just talked about, and then you can install Flash 10.1.
Cool. Yeah. The downside is as soon as you do, your battery goes dead.
Exactly, because Flash sucks.
Yeah.
So for all of you who want Flash on your phone, you have to jailbreak, which... Now, this is something I don't know. I know I've stated my opinion on this. What's your opinion on jailbreaking devices?
Oh, I think it's fine. I mean, I think if you're doing it to steal applications, because is it still true that if you jailbreak your iPhone, you can download everything for free?
Or not every...
Well, how did that work? Like,
here's the deal. So whenever you get an application onto your iPhone or whatever, they come as, I believe they're .ipsw files or whatever. They're .ip something. They are, for all intents and purposes, zip files that the iPhone knows how to decompile and run.
Okay.
And the people who are doing this, you know, just grab them, because you can, if you're good enough, you can just grab them. And they decompiled them, took away the checks to make sure that, you know, they came from iTunes, you're installing it the right way. And then they uploaded them to, you know, Cydia, where basically Cydia is fake iTunes.
Okay.
It's an app store for cracked apps.
I got you.
Yeah, so technically, yes, that is still possible that you can just go grab whatever you want.
Okay. So, like, I think if you're doing it for that purposes, it's like, come on.
Right.
Quit stealing.
Pony up the 99 cents.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I really thought that was one nice thing about, like, cheap software, that people would just pay it. Like, just, like, pay the freaking $1.42 it is or whatever.
Right. So, it sounded like you had a good reason for jailbreaking your phone. Like,
well, I mean, a good reason is just to get rid of all the Apple crap. Like, if you want to just use the iPhone and run Linux on it or something. Or,
but you really can't.
Why?
How do you get rid of the Apple crap?
Well, I mean, I guess once you jailbreak it, I don't know. I've never done it. I don't have an iPhone.
Yeah, I haven't either.
But I'm just saying, like, it allows you to run Flash.
Right.
I mean, that's a good thing. Like, I guess my point is you don't have to live by Apple's rules anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my whole point about jailbreaking, which I brought up before, is that, you know, you're basically opening yourself up to more exploits than there already are, because now you've broken out of the sandbox. Now any application that runs on your system can have complete control of your device. So I see that as a bad thing. And especially if you're one of the idiots who just jailbreak your phone, turn on SSH, and don't change the root password. Everybody knows the default root password of Apple devices, you know, iPhones and iPads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the longest time, it was Alpine. I don't know if they've changed it now, but if you do a Google search, you can find it. So if you jailbreak your phone or your iPad and you don't do anything else, you're leaving yourself wide open to hacks. People actively search for these things, trying the default password just to see if they can find it.
So if you're on an iPhone that hasn't been jailbroken, and you know the root password, you still can't get into the root account?
Because there's no SSH. There's no way to remotely access it. There's no open channel.
What?
Jailbreaking removes... There's a single process that runs. I forget what the name of it is, but if you look at the process list of an iPhone, you can tell which one it is. That is basically the lock... I think it's Lockdown D.
Right.
So it is the sandboxing application, and basically jailbreaking it opens that up and lets you open up ports and run SSH and run Apache if you wanted Apache.
What about from like within the phone? There's no way to get at the root account. You can't do that.
No, because each application is sandboxed. You can't get out of it.
Wow, it's crazy.
And that's what jailbreaking your phone does. It allows you to bypass those restrictions.
It gets you out of jail.
It gets you out of jail free. And it really is free. Yeah, so I always tell people don't do it. You know, I never see a good enough reason to jailbreak a device.
Yeah.
You know, there is always that one app that comes out you can only get if you jailbreak your device. Wait a month. There will be a 99 cent or $2 version that you can get.
Yeah. And make somebody rich with.
Right. Make somebody rich. That's what it's all about.
Yep.
Isn't it?
Making people rich.
All right. So let's stop talking about Apple. And let's talk about the new cell phone technology, which we always talk about. And that is LTE.
Long-term evolution.
Did you get a chance to look through this article? I thought it had a lot of good information. So basically, this article is kind of like the roadmap, you know, what we're going to see for LTE devices. We mentioned last week that the first LTE device has been approved for use in the wild. So whenever it comes out for public availability, you can have an LTE phone, which is 4G. You know,
it's real 4G, too.
Not Sprint crap, we're going to fake you out 4G.
Right, it's real 4G.
Yeah. Sprint 4G is not 4G. So if you bought...
It's as fast as 4G, but it's not really 4G.
Yeah, so if you bought an Evo because you thought you were getting a 4G phone, you just have a fast 3G phone.
Yeah.
So LTE is actually 4G, fourth generation cell phone data. And this roadmap basically lists out cities, you know, for 2010, 2011, 2012. It lists out some handsets. It lists out data plans. What did you think of all this? I mean, this is some good stuff.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, I've never seen so much detail about all the rollout, you know, for any technology, especially a wireless one, is this. They say that by 2013, the entire 3G network, as it exists today, will be completely overlaid by Verizon's 4G or LTE equivalent. Yeah. I'm sorry, or LTE network.
Yeah, that is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like 2.5 years from now.
And, you know, don't be scared. It's backwards compatible.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about your phone breaking.
Yeah, they're going to leave the 3G network there, just like they've left the 2G network there. And get this, you get a data plan, you get unlimited 3G.
Right.
And probably a 5 gig cap on the 4G.
Yeah, they said there are caps. They didn't say what the caps are, because obviously nobody has ever...
Yeah,
done it yet because it's brand new.
That's really smart, because what that'll do is offload. This is almost in a way of tiering in a way, like
kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, hey, if you're a heavy data user, you might want to consider using 3G.
It's going to be a megabit slower than 4G, but hey, whatever.
Oh, a lot more than a megabit.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, but it's slower, but it's like it's there and it's free. Or, you know, just in the sense like, oh, I don't want to use up all of my awesome fastness.
Right. Yeah, this is a way of tiering and not screwing over the customer.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Right. Somebody's figured it out.
Yeah, so it sounds promising. I mean, I'm surprised that they'll have a complete overlay in 2.5 years. That's impressive.
Yeah, that is smoking.
Yeah.
I mean, that is fast.
And it seemed like they said 2012, all major highways and interstates and all cities will, within approximate radius of 30 miles from the interstate highways, will receive 4G. So, I mean, if you live along a U.S. highway or, you know, an interstate, you're probably going to get it, you know.
How far are we from the turnpike? Are we within 30 miles?
We're real close to 30 miles.
So, I think we might have 4G.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
It's definitely, because it's 22 miles from downtown Johnstown to Somerset.
Oh, so we got it.
Yeah, so Richland.
Yeah, we're in the 4G area.
Definitely got it.
That is awesome. Okay, so definitely look forward to LTE coming in the next couple of years. If you're in the bigger cities in Georgia and Texas, look forward this year. If you're in bigger cities in Louisiana and Mississippi,
Alabama,
you can look for it next year. Even Morgantown, West Virginia. So wow. All of you that go to WVU, look for LTE in 2011.
Big shout out to my friend Doug. He's like, he doesn't have 3G down there.
Oh.
And he's going to get 4G before me.
I feel like I need to bring out the...
And he's got a droid, although it won't work on 4G. I
feel like I need to bring out the jersey. Oh!
Oh! Oh!
Okay. So moving on. This is a rumor that, you know, we made fun of Bloomberg for putting out this article without any sources, and basically said, you know, you guys are idiots. You need to have sources. Well, it looks like TechCrunch did the same thing, but they have a little bit more information. Basically, what they're saying is, we believe there will be a CDMA iPhone in January because we have sources that say Apple is buying CDMA chipsets from Qualcomm,
mm-hmm.
and they are buying them now for a December build. So, I mean, what do you think this actually makes the myth true now?
Well, I think it's a little premature to say it's going to be an iPhone, because what if it's just a CDMA iPad?
Right. Yeah, they don't say, you don't know what it's for. A chip is a chip.
Yeah. It could be that they're going to enable 3G radios in their laptops.
Very well could be.
It could be a combined LTE and 3GE chipset from Qualcomm.
I would honestly put more money on having 3G or LTE in a laptop than them coming out with a CDMA iPhone in January or in next year.
Yeah. Like a new rev of the MacBook Air.
Right.
Which
something.
Is due probably.
Yeah. Because, you know, netbooks have basically taken over that market. Mm-hmm. You know, they've crushed the MacBook Air, and a lot of netbooks nowadays are coming with 3G chips. You know, especially ones from like Nokia, you can't buy it without getting an AT&T data plan with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would definitely put more money on that. Good prediction.
Yeah.
You're thinking. Awesome.
Oh, I don't think there's any reason to believe it would necessarily for sure be a phone.
Yeah. I mean, I've stated it before that Verizon will never get an iPhone until LTE is out and Apple can make an LTE iPhone. And I still believe that.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but here's the thing. If Apple waits till then, let's say they do wait till then, and they release one that works on LTE, and it works on Verizon's LTE network, if we're really talking about it being usable in most of the country, then that's really probably 2.5 years off.
Yeah, definitely.
And even at that, if their data plans are still arranged such that you get 5 gig on the 4G, like they're saying, and unlimited on the 3G, if they don't use a chipset that's also CDMA compatible, because just because you're LTE compatible doesn't make you CDMA compatible.
Right, definitely different technologies.
Right, so Qualcomm is still the only company, because they own the intellectual property, that can produce, without licensing fees, a combined LTE and CDMA chipset. So
yeah, that is interesting.
Right, so if you want to be on Verizon, yeah, you could use a non-CDMA-enabled LTE chipset, but you wouldn't be able to get on Verizon's 3G. You don't even be able to use their 4G.
Right. Run through your cap in 2 days.
Right. Possibly. You know, depending on how much of a data hog you are.
Yeah. And, you know, just going back to those plans, I like them because 3G is fast enough for me.
Yeah.
I stream
good.
Video. It's fine.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm not downloading
and just
ISOs.
Just think of having another network, like 4G, offloading a lot of that data.
Right. And that's
so
the big thing.
Probably the backhaul. I mean, they still have to increase their backhaul, but if they do, then there'll be even more bandwidth available for everybody else.
Yeah, and this will, I don't know. I'm wondering, you know, this thought just popped into my head about the backhaul. Verizon's backhaul and AT&T's backhaul. Do we know which company has the problem with the backhaul? Like, is all of the problem with the iPhone and slow data in big cities AT&T's backhaul, or is it after it gets out of AT&T's backhaul and starts at Verizon's network or Sprint's network or anything? You know, has anybody ever figured that out, like where the real bottleneck is?
It doesn't matter. I mean, if you're on the AT&T network and it's slow, then it doesn't really matter if it's in the air or it's the backhaul or it's the connection point to the backbone. They're not buying enough bandwidth.
But that's what I'm saying. Is it AT&T's problem? Is it Verizon's problem? Are we going to need to see every company increase their backhaul, or else Verizon's going to have the same issues once somebody on a Verizon network has to hit data that has to travel across an AT&T network?
Are you saying, is it Verizon problems now with their network? I thought you meant in the terms of, is it Verizon's problem because they own the backbone?
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Interesting question. I think that I don't know. They said that the Verizon phones are actually more data heavy than iPhones.
Right. Yeah. We mentioned that last week, right?
Yeah. And they're not having a problem now. And they have more users, right? More smartphone users, I think.
I don't want to say yes or no, but I believe that's what the article said.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe their network's fine.
Yeah. That could very well be that Verizon's network is perfectly fine. But still, once they start deploying LTE, they're going to need more backhaul because people are going to use it.
Yeah.
You know, going to use it like water.
I think there's a level at which it'll hit that it'll even out. Like, I think we're definitely on the ramp up, but it'll probably, like, just think about, like, the internet, the normal wired internet. You know, your connection at home is wired, but beyond that point, it's all the same as it would be for wireless.
Right.
And the bottlenecks that we have are typically still the connection coming into our house, not the backhaul.
Definitely. Definitely. So. Okay, so moving on to our last story of the day. And it's a sad one. It is one that I want to go slap some people around for. This article comes from Pocket Now on August 6th. They say that on the Windows 7 front, the version of Internet Explorer that they're putting on Windows Phone 7, sorry, not Windows 7, Windows Phone 7.
Yes.
It will not support HTML5. WTF.
Well, it's not a surprise. Everyone knows that it's a branch of IE8 that's going to be on that phone.
But dude.
Oh, it's a big
oak. Everybody is making their websites HTML5 compatible for the mobile market.
Yeah.
And Microsoft is saying, we don't want any of that.
Well, the worst part is that it's not going to support Flash out of the box either.
Right. They got nothing.
Yeah, they're going to have to. It will support Silverlight.
Nobody uses that.
Right. Well, maybe that'll change.
You know who uses that? Companies like the Olympics or, you know, big time companies that Microsoft gives them a lot of money and says, hey, make your whole website in Silverlight.
Yeah.
Those are the only people who use Silverlight.
Well, there's advantages to using it, but
do you know them off the top of your head?
Well, one is if you're already developing in like .NET, it's you can develop right.
Okay, so advantages for the developer.
Yeah,
what
big
about
time.
For me having a Windows Phone 7?
What does it matter? Like, honestly, if you can get the content, what does it matter what pipe it comes down or what technology is used?
Okay, that doesn't matter, but I'm still on the fact that there is no content.
There is no content. Well, right now, yeah.
Yeah.
But there might be.
Do you really think that?
I don't know.
Well, here's what happened.
You know what? You're right. Microsoft sucks.
I am right.
No, seriously. I think this is a big problem for them. It'll probably end up that, I mean, hopefully, you'll be able to put a third-party browser on there.
Right.
That will support HTML5. Come on, Google Chrome.
Yeah, Windows Phone is normally an open OS that you can install what you want.
Yeah, Windows Phone 7 is a little less open than the older ones. But hopefully, you'll be able to download like Firefox Mobile whenever that comes out. What's that called that they're working on?
I think it is just Firefox Mobile. I don't know.
It's got some funky name.
They made like Firefox Home for the iPhone, which isn't actually a browser. It's just a bookmark syncing tool or something.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm worried about this. I think this could be a deal breaker. But on the other hand, Flash is really pushing. Like, okay, HTML5 is cool, but it doesn't do everything that you want to do. And if they eventually get Flash, then it may not matter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, what I see right now is that, you know, when the iPhone came out and it didn't have Flash, because the iPhone was such a big player, everybody jumped on the HTML5 bandwagon and started pushing for it, converting their sites. So because the iPhone was such a big player, they were able to bring HTML5 to the forefront. I don't see Windows Phone 7 as being a big enough player to make people bring Silverlight or something else to the forefront for mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was a mobile phone developer, I would say, holy crap, I just spent millions of dollars converting my stuff to HTML5. I'm not doing it again for somebody else.
Right. Well, it might be that the Microsoft authoring tools will let you author in both HTML5 and in Silverlight. And if they do that, that could be pretty crazy.
Yeah, write it in HTML5, then click the button Save in Silverlight to put on Windows Phone 7.
It's unfortunate, but I mean, I think we have to face the fact too that there's going to be a lot of computers out there that aren't HTML5 compatible for years because people just won't upgrade their browser.
That is true.
You know?
Yeah, and this is going to be a very changing market. You know, today it's HTML5. Maybe it will be Silverlight tomorrow. You know, we don't know. Yeah, but either way, I still think Microsoft should get their head out of their butt for this one.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the end of the show. So I asked you earlier, you know, if you had anything else, and, you know, we added in that extra Engadget article.
No,
nothing. That's been kind of slow. I had a really hard time trying to find interesting things to talk about this week.
Yeah, it was a slow tech week, I think.
So technology people start doing stuff.
I think it was the Folk Fest. Everybody was, or not
the, oh, the Flood City
the
Music
Flood
Fest.
City, everybody was down there.
That's true.
Yeah.
All of Silicon Valley came to Johnstown.
Yeah.
So if you guys were wondering.
Huge success.
Yeah, definitely.
Huge success.
All right, so if you want to get an article on the show for us to talk about, as usual, tag it on Delicious. For next week's show, tag it Slongcast014 for episode 14. If you want to contact either of us, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. My username is Slongcack. You can find Ryan also on Facebook and Twitter. His username is Ryan Lancey. And I haven't mentioned it for a while, our website, so you probably already know my website because that's where you get the podcast from. But for those of you just tuning in or you got it from a friend, it's kevinslonka.com. Ryan, did you want to put your website out there?
Well, I have a blog that I keep. It's called Lancepedia. So lancepedia.blogspot.com.
Very cool.
And it's spelled funny, though. It's Lantzipedia.
Ooh. So it's not your last name, Pedia.
No, I don't know why I put the I in there. Like, in hindsight.
Maybe like Wikipedia you wanted it to be more
like?
Yeah,
I think it was like Wiki, like Lancey, Wiki.
Yes.
I don't know.
Kind of weird.
For the record, I did not call myself that. I had some people call me that.
Yeah, he's not full of himself.
No. Well, maybe I am.
Maybe a little bit.
Not in that way, at least.
All right, everybody. So I hope you enjoyed the show. We love your feedback. So please leave us comments on kevinslonka.com, on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever you hear about this. Let us know what we're doing right. But more importantly, let us know what we're doing wrong. And I hope you guys have a wonderful Monday evening.